I'd like to call the Property Tax Division to order, and we do now have a quorum. And our first order of business is to approve the minutes of, and let me get the date here, February 11th. And are they in everyone's packet? I see mine. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of February 11th?
Madam Chair, so move.
Thank you. Representative Marquardt moves approval of the minutes. Any corrections or additions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The minutes are adopted. Thank you very much, and welcome to Local Tax Day in the Property Tax Division. Today we're going to hear a variety of bills dealing with local option sales and lodging taxes. We have lots of local government officials who have braved whatever weather and road conditions were in front of them to come in today. And each has been given 8 minutes to overview their proposal and to address the key questions that we've always asked about these provisions, which is, you know, what are the specific projects that they're going to fund with? And with these dollars, have they gone to the local voters for a referendum already, or is that still pending? Have they do they have neighbors in their region who support this? Traditionally, these have been used for regional benefits, and to tell us the good things that will happen within their community as a result. And after conferring with the leads of the committee, Representative Hertas and Representative Druskowski, and recognizing that we're having so many local officials coming in, we agreed that we would have 20 minutes for questions in the afternoon session and 20 minutes total in the evening session for questions. Usually these don't generate a lot of discussion. And any additional questions that we have, we will send to the local governments, get them get back to us, and in writing, and we'll provide that to all the members so that we can stay on time and so that people can get back on the roads before anything else with the weather arises. If you might recall that in our overview earlier, we did kind of go through this a little, you know, those overviews kind of go by quick, I know, at the beginning of session, but we did go through those. But if you have individual questions about how these work and the traditions and those sorts of things, Pat Dalton, who's our House Research lead on this, has said she'd be glad to respond to individuals after the meeting and go through with additional background if you'd like that. And we'll have opportunities in the future to have more discussion, but today's really to showcase our local officials and the authors that they're working with. And with that, I would like to welcome Representative Liz Lagarde with House File 667. And can we have a motion to bring House File 667 before us to be considered for inclusion in the Omnibus Division Report?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Hare. And with that, we welcome you and your guests, Representative Liz Lagarde. Just so you know, our timekeeper here is Ellen Larson, our Community Legislative Assistant, so she'll let you know as
we're gonna
we go along.
Time. We'll beat
All
that
right.
time.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'm proud to bring House File 667 to authorize the City of Virginia to impose a local sales tax. You know, the three questions that you had mentioned, this tax will be used to fund the renovation, reconstruction, expansion, and improvement to the Miners Memorial Recreation Complex. The money raised with this tax is used solely for that purpose. The tax will also expire after 20 years or until it raises $30 million, whatever comes first. The referendum for this tax was on the ballot during the 2018 general election, and it passed overwhelmingly. Approximately 75% of all registered voters voted, and it almost made 70%. So overwhelming support for this project. And we talk about the importance of regionally. Well, I can speak as a former mayor in a part of that region that this project will enhance all of our communities with its ability to diversify and bring in people from outside and also spur new development to feed off of this. And so with that, I am extremely pleased to welcome my dear friend Mayor Cuffey from the City of Virginia to answer any questions and to make comments.
Welcome to the committee, Mayor. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Larry Cuffey, Jr. I'm the mayor of the city of Virginia. Thank you for the opportunity to give testimony today regarding our request to apply a 1% sales tax to the city of Virginia for the residents and surrounding communities in order to raise funds to reconstruct, to renovate, and to expand the Miners Memorial Project, which was, this building was built in 1959. We are changing the name from the Miners Memorial Building Complex to the Miners Event Convention and Community Center Building. It'll provide a variety of services available to the community, not only locally, but regionally. And the legislature, we were fortunate enough from the legislature in the 2016 bonding bill to get $12 million in order to help fund this part of this project. So in order for us to do that, we were going to use the $12 million and leverage that $12 million to build an entirely new complex. We'll renovate parts of it, but the entire complex will be rebuilt. And it's going to be a community center, a convention center, an event center, and a sports complex. And we have behind me is the architect of record, DSGW Architects. We are in the process of putting together the project development as it moves forward. We will be shovel ready to move forward with that June or as soon as the snow falls and the ice melts, we'll be ready to go with this project. It's shovel ready. The project is going to provide not only a new event center for the region, it's going to give us the opportunity to do some economic expansion as well. And the economic expansion, we surrounded by the Miners Memorial Building Complex. Now, we have the Virginia High School, who's building a new school, or they hope to build a new school. It's a collaborative with the city of Evelyn to kind of merge those two schools together and build a new school on some land that the city intends to give to them in exchange for some of the property that's surrounding the Miners Memorial Building project. So the Miners is going to be 86,000 square feet is what it is now. We're going to expand that to 140,000 square feet with some economic development opportunities for a new restaurant, hotel, and those and a lot of amenities in that area. We'll be able to provide the amenities in the community that we haven't been able to provide for the last 20 years. And the building is at end of its constructive life. So this is an important build, an important project for the city of Virginia and the surrounding communities. So that being said, I would entertain any other questions that you might have that I may be able to answer for you. And in addition to that, I have a packet of information that is available that was put together by the city, DSGW Architects, and our friends of the Public Safety Committee, the Ground Grassroots Campaign by the citizens of Virginia, and many business owners and people from all walks of life who support this project. So thank you for the opportunity to testify. I will entertain any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Cuffey, and we have a question here from Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wondering if, if the $30 million is giving anybody pause. I mean, that's a very sizable project. And the second question would be, it sounds like you're including some things, restaurant and hotel. Are those going to be city-owned or are those private sector owners?
Mayor Cuffey.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. This is going to be private development. It'll be a public-private partnership in which the private sector will be investing in that part of this community. We also will utilize some of the retail space within that to rent in retail space and work with not only some of the local mining companies, but some private sector people in order to do that. The miners project will be city-owned. The rest of the project and expenses will be privately owned. And the $30 million, there was a lot of advertising, a lot of community meetings, a lot of committee meetings with every stakeholder that would be utilizing that facility. And from children to business owners to adults to the elderly, we have services for that. And our park and rec department will be resurrecting all these services that we have not been able to provide over the last 15 years as a result of that. So there has been no pause. We have an overwhelming support of 70% of the voting public approve this.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. I mean, I'm glad to hear that, it is the private sector that's developing these things for the most part. Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
And Representative Lissegard, I have another testifier, Mike Jarek, on the agenda.
Only if needed.
Okay, yep. Thank you. Any other questions on this project? If not, is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or with concerns about this project? If not, Representative Herb, renews her motion that this that House File 667 be laid over for consideration in the division report. Thank you so much, Mayor, and Representative Lisselgard for presenting your proposal.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members.
Thank you. And next we have Representative Marquardt, House File 1271. And please make a motion to bring it before the committee and then share your proposal.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 1271.
Thank you. House File 1271 is before us, and please share with us the focus of this proposal.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. What this proposal would do is approve a local option sales tax of 0.5 cent, 0.5%, and it would fund the issuance of bonds of up to $6.7 million plus bond costs for a law enforcement center in the city of Detroit Lakes. And the city of Detroit Lakes is a city of about 9,000. It's a sub-regional city with tourism as probably one of its top industries. And hundreds of thousands of people visit this regional center each and every year. In fact, you might be familiar with the WeFest Country Music Festival that's held for 3 days in August, brings in about 45,000 people. Detroit Lakes is noted for its 1 mile of public beach, which is nationally recognized and brings tourists throughout. So this is truly a regional concern. The police station law enforcement center right now is about 6,000 square feet. They need to triple that size. It is inadequate. I think the building was originally built in the 50s, I believe. And this is a way in which they can provide safety and security better, not only to their residents, but all of the regional residents and folks that come from around. And I've always stated that the number one service that we can provide as a state or a city or a nation is security and keeping people safe, and that's the number one thing we can do. So with that, Madam Chair, I do have the police chief, Steve Todd, here, who have a few comments, and also City Administrator Kelsey Clem is here just for resource if there's questions we cannot answer.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee, Chief Todd, and please introduce yourself for the record and share your thoughts.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Stephen Todd, and I am the Chief of Police in Detroit Lakes. Chairman and committee members, the Detroit Lakes sales tax proposal is to institute a 0.5% sales tax to fund a new police department at a cost of $6.7 million, and this is expected to be paid off within 10 years. The City of Detroit Lakes is unique in that we serve as a regional tourist destination with our mile-long beach, recreational activities, and special events such as the 4th of July, Water Carnival, and WeFest. We are fortunate to attract a large amount of tourists and shoppers to our community. However, this influx of visitors also increases pressure on our department and calls for service increase significantly during the summer months. I can tell you that in February we would typically have from 700 to 900 calls for service in that month, and you move to July and you're up into the 1400 range. Because of this, the City Council sought a sales tax to fund our outdated and undersized police department last summer. We felt that it was right to share this cost with users that are coming into our community from outside rather than just having our community members pay for this with their property taxes. During the general election in November, the voters of Detroit Lakes agreed and voted almost a 2-to-1 margin to approve the local option sales tax. We are here today asking for legislative approval to implement the sales tax to build the safe, secure, efficient police facility that our officers deserve and that our regional community expects. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you, Chief, for coming down and sharing that. Are there any questions from committee members? If not, is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for with concerns on this proposal? If not, any closing remarks, Representative Marquardt?
Madam Chair and members, just thank you so much for the consideration. Appreciate that.
Thank you. And Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House File 1271 be laid over for consideration in the division report. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next up, we'll... All right, we're going to skip to the next bill while we summon Representative Lesh to the committee. And Representative Cleavorn, House File 877. And who would like to move House File 877 to bring it before the committee? Representative Huett removes. Representative Huett moves House File 877 in front of the committee and to be considered for layover and inclusion in the division report. Welcome to the committee, Representative Cleavorn, and I understand you have an amendment.
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And Representative Huett moves the A1 amendment to get the bill in the form that the author requests. Any discussion? It looks like a minor amendment. If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. Thank you, and thank welcome you. To the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I ask for consideration and to move House File 877. House File 877 allows the City of Plymouth to impose an extra 3% lodging tax in addition to the 3% lodging tax allowed under general law. The revenues from this special tax must be used for capital improvements to public recreational facilities or for marketing and promotion purposes. Madam Chair, I would ask that you would please yield the floor to Mayor Washi.
Welcome to the committee, Mayor Washi, and please introduce yourself and tell us about your city's proposal.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the committee for hearing us today. We appreciate that. I was newly elected onto the as mayor and sworn in January, having been on the council for the previous 7 years as a city council member. Just some familiarity with the city of Plymouth. We're the seventh largest city in the state with the third largest suburban in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area with a population of over 78,000. Plymouth is the fourth largest city in the state when measured by GDP. With over 58,000 jobs, in fact, Plymouth is actually has a larger population during the daytime than we do during the evening. Plymouth is the fifth largest net contributor in fiscal disparities, and Plymouth does not receive any LGA. Plymouth is requesting the ability to recapture or to capture tax revenue generated by tourism, as our peer cities already do. Our city manager, Dave Callister, with me, will talk briefly about those points. Thank you.
Thank you, and welcome to the committee, Mr. Callister.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Dave Callister, City Manager, City of Plymouth. You should have received a couple of handouts, and I just wanted to briefly go over those. We have a brochure that kind of explains what we would be using the lodging tax proceeds for. Currently, we do not collect a lodging tax, so we're at 0% for our lodging tax in our community. And what we're requesting here is to be allowed the authority to have a 3% lodging tax to use for public recreational facilities. Now, the statute has been around for quite some time, and it's not a one-size-fits-all statute, as you can see from the second handout, which shows the largest seven cities in the state. And you can see that there are provisions for general fund, there are provisions for recreational or civic center projects in all of those top, or five of the top seven cities. So we're simply asking to have the same opportunity as our larger peer cities to be able to use a lodging tax for that. And the nexus being we have recreational tourism. We do not have a regional mall. We do not have a high retail area. We do not have museums or stadiums. But we do have recreational tourism, which I think was probably not considered when the original statute was adopted. So we're looking to have those opportunities as other cities do. And just an example of that nexus, we in the last year have had two larger hockey tournaments in our ice center, which has three sheets of ice, National High School Hockey Tournament, and also the National Sled Hockey Tournament. And both of those tournaments requested over 800 hotel rooms. We were not able to accommodate all of those in our community because we only have 1,000 hotel rooms, so they benefited some of the surrounding areas as well. So I think what we would look at, and as the mayor mentioned, we would just like to have some opportunities, non-property tax revenues, and we have increased our property taxes to cover a lot of these recreational assets, but we simply want some money back to our community because we feel with regards to regional recreation that we are overburdened and we would like some other revenue opportunities to be able to use those to the benefit of the community and the surrounding area. Within a five-mile radius of the city of Plymouth, we have over 600,000 residents. So, again, population, regional, and we're looking at some different options. The intent is for a 3% request, which would subsequently have to be approved by the city council if the legislature did approve this particular bill. So just asking for your consideration. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for coming here. And Representative Hertaus has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Cleveren. I noticed that Plymouth is citing here about $6.5 billion of business sales, gross business sales, and not the lodging tax would not apply to all of that. But could you give us a rough estimate of what you would anticipate you would be generating, putting this lodging tax on a number of the hotels that exist in Plymouth?
Mr. Callister?
Madam Chair, Representative, the $6.5 billion is the gross business taxes. The lodging tax revenue we would expect from our 1,000 rooms would be in the neighborhood of $500,000 to $600,000 per year.
Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I notice that you don't have any expiration date or any proposal to end this. Is this ongoing and perpetual is your plan?
Mr. Callister?
That's correct.
And that's somewhat unusual for these. I'll just let you know for the record, and that'll probably be a discussion item as we move forward. It's not. I'm sorry. Pat will save me from giving incorrect information as I continue to learn as well. Ms. Dalton?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, it's pretty rare to actually have an expiration date on a lodging tax. We always have them on the general sales taxes, but rarely do we have them on the lodging tax or food and beverage taxes.
Thank you. And Representative Juskowski, I think you had a question.
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. The first one would be for Ms. Dalton. Ms. Dalton, can you remind us, so line 1.15 on the bill, what is that, and is that the general process in statute that the city goes through in order to initiate its own lodging tax, which I know it's got the authority to do on its own for the 3%? Is that what that is?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Draskowski, line 5 of the bill references the general prohibition against either local governments either imposing or increasing taxes on sales or taxes on income, and lodging is a tax on a sale.
Nope. Representative Stelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Dalton, maybe I didn't speak very clearly. Line 1.15, the last line of the bill.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. Representative Draskowski, yes, that's simply the language that is standard for if we pass a special law. They must, by ordinance, accept this additional authority, and then they have to file with the Secretary of State.
So with that, Madam Chair.
Representative Stelzky.
Thank you. And Ms. Dalton, do we need an effective date for the bill, or is it August 1st plus this?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, it is effective the day after they do all of the required filing, and that's standard, again, for these types of taxes.
Okay. Thank you for that. One additional question, Madam Chair.
Okay, Representative Juskowski.
And that would be for the folks from Plymouth. Why jumping immediately to 6% instead of you can do the 3% without coming here? Why not? Why haven't you done that?
Mr. Calliston.
Madam Chair, Representative, our intent is to implement a 3% lodging tax. As I said, the one size does not fit all with the lodging taxes. We have no intent of creating a Convention and Visitors Bureau because that doesn't necessarily apply to us. It applies for a lot of communities. It just doesn't apply specifically for us in our needs. So the intent is to implement the 3% and have the flexibility to do both tourism and marketing and public recreational facilities.
So
thank you, Representative Duszkowski.
Thank you. So I'm still not clear on that. So you are going to do marketing and promotion of the community with this. You do have the ability, without coming before the legislature, granted to communities in law, to be able to do a lodging tax of 3% on your own. Why haven't you done the marketing and promotion part? Do you have to have the anyway, go ahead.
Maintenance.
Representative Clavarne.
Madam Chair, I think the confusion is lying in that the 3% that is currently allowed to us is solely for tourism and promotion. The 3% that we want to use, we will use for the facilities as well as tourism and marketing if we so choose to do so at a later time.
Thank you. Madam Chair, just a quick comment, and then I'm done.
Representative Duszkowski, and then we do need to move on.
We had a bill like this last year, if you'll remember, Madam Chair, and that was in the city of Woodbury, I think. And I don't know, maybe they're here again, but very similar, where they wanted to build a building with the lodging tax. And I don't know, this is really a trend that I think we need to look long and hard at, using lodging tax money to build buildings. Last year's got kind of turned away, and I just would urge caution. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And Representative Hewitt has a question.
Real quick, Madam Chair. So this will be used for capital improvements. Is that correct?
That is Representative Clavarne. Excuse me, Madam Chair. Yes, Representative Hewitt.
And a question for staff then, Madam Chair.
Representative Hewitt.
And so that's the reason they're here, is because this is a capital improvement and the 3% would go towards that. Is that correct?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative, there is a general law allowing 3%, but 95% of that tax imposed under the general law must be used for marketing and tourism. If you want to use it for anything else, you essentially have to come in with a special law.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And we have had another testifier who's requested to testify, and that's Tony Quilas. I may be pronouncing that wrong. Welcome. Please come down.
Madam Chair, I will be brief because I know you've got a long agenda and you're coming back tonight. My name is Tony Quilas. I have the honor and pleasure of representing Hospitality Minnesota, which is the umbrella organization for the Minnesota Restaurant Association, the Minnesota Resort and Campground Association, the Minnesota Lodging Association, as well as the Minnesota Association of Convention and Visitors Bureau. You've touched on a couple of our objections, Madam Chair, and committee members. And the first one is, as Ms. Dalton and members have pointed out, under current statute right now, any city can impose a lodging tax of 3%. But then that the deposition of those proceeds that are collected under that, a Visitors and Convention Bureau must be created, and 95% of those proceeds must be used for marketing and promotion of that city. So that's number one. And number two, if you, Representative Draskowski touched on it a little bit, right now, according to the Department of Revenue's website, the current sales tax in the city of Plymouth is 7.525. So if you add 6% on top of that, that would be 13.525 tax on property, on our members, as they would sell a hotel room in the city of Plymouth. And there's a little concern there, Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair and members, that a lot of folks these days let their fingers do the walking. So if I can do some comparisons, if I'm in town for a hockey tournament or a softball tournament or a basketball tournament, that I will look around and shop that way. And we're a little concerned that we will lose members, are concerned that they will lose some folks that will come into their facilities when they see that 13.525. Madam Chair, thank you very much for the opportunity to present that to the committee today.
Thank you, Mr. Quilas. And are there any other members of the public who'd like to testify for with concerns on this bill? If not, I see a number of questions. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the Marketing and Tourism Bureau, can Plymouth tell us just, I mean, how many employees that is going to require? It just seems like there is sort of a movement here to have all of our cities have a tourism bureau. And it just seems like, well, isn't there a better way to do this, really?
Welcome back, Mr. Callister.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't know how many employees, but because that's not what we want to do. We do not want to create a convention and visitors bureau. We want to put the money directly to work for those facilities that draw the hotels, draw the stays, the hockey tournaments, the weddings, the conventions, the corporate centers. So that's really what we're trying to accomplish by this. We're not interested in creating a convention and visitors bureau. That's why we're here today.
But, Madam Chair and Mr. Mayor, the first 3% has to fund, right, a convention and tourism bureau and the marketing of it.
Mr. Callister.
Madam Chair and Representative, there's some misunderstanding here because the way the laws are written, as we understand it, that by statute we can implement a 3%. That doesn't have to be first and then implement another 3%. Our intent is to do 3%. That's all we want to do, because if you're right, if we created or if we did implement that first 3% that you're talking about, we would have to create a convention and visitors bureau, and we would rather put in money to physical facilities that drive hotel stays rather than put it into ads and staff and that sort of thing. That's just our personal preference.
I think there's some confusion about this. We're asked Ms. Dalton to address that.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think the confusion results from what's on line 10, lines 9 and 10 of the bill. It says this provision must not, the total tax imposed under this section and the general law must not exceed 6% if the intent of the city is to only impose the 3% under the special law. You could offer an oral amendment to delete the 6 and replace it with 3.
May I address that?
Sure.
Madam Chair.
Representative Clever.
At this time, I think it's better for us to say our city is a growing city. We hope that this economy of ours will continue to grow. And at this time, it is not our intent to use that 3%. But when we grow to a much larger city, it might be more prudent for the taxpayers' time and the taxpayers' dollars to leave that 3% there for future use. But at this time, it is not our intention for us to currently to use that 3%.
Thank you. And we have a question from Representative Bernardi.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And that's what I wanted to get clarified, too, because I know Representative Cleavorn has talked to me about this, and it's important to our community. And I was understanding it as being 3%, so you clarified what the law says and what your intent is. Thank you.
Thank you. And last, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just curious, a couple of years ago, I served on the Explore Minnesota as a liaison, one of those extra committees that you sit on. And we do spend quite a bit of the state taxpayers' money to explore and to promote Minnesota. So I'm just curious as to, is Explore Minnesota maybe not doing what it ought to do? It seems like there's a number of lodging taxes that we'll be voting on and discussing today, and a lot of that go to promotion. So maybe Explore Minnesota, maybe we need to explore what they're doing if they're not really able to help a lot of our city's promotion. Or am I off kilter on that?
Mr. Callister.
Madam Chair and Representative, I think Explore Minnesota does a great job, but as I mentioned earlier in my testimony, we don't have a museum, a regional mall, stadiums, arenas, that sort of thing, so that we get enough support for what we have, but we don't have those big ticket items like a Mall of America or something like that. So I don't think that really matters to us. I think they do an adequate job, and I don't think that's what we're trying to address here.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you. With that, Representative Hewitt renews his motion that House File 877, as amended, be laid over for consideration in the final division report. Thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members.
And Representative Lesh was here, but we don't see him in the room right now.
Yes, we do.
Oh, you're in the front row, and it's sitting too low. Welcome to the committee, Representative Lesh.
That's the royal
reason. And Representative Herr, would you like to move House File 1218 to to bring it before the committee and be considered for possible inclusion in the division report?
Yes, I would, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee. Representative Lesh, please introduce your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This provision was in last year's tax bill. It's an increase of 1%. It applies to hotels with over 50 rooms. It impacts 11 hotels, all of whom are singing Kumbaya, voting to tax themselves on this. The hotels would have some control over what the revenue would be used for. It's statutorily dedicated to promotion and marketing, has been stated here already today. 95% of it goes to Visit St. Paul, Convention and Visitors Bureau, and no dollars go to increase the general fund of the City of St. Paul, Representative Draskowski. Just make sure you know that. The total tax burden will still be lower than Bloomington, Minneapolis, Duluth, and Rochester, and the lodging is in line with the lodging rate is in line with competitor cities around the United States. So in the last 10 years, Madam Chair, we've had some changes around St. Paul. We got a Saints stadium, soccer stadium. When we still have the Science Museum and Children's Museum, the Ordway. And they're growing. That's why we have this need. But I think better than me, the folks who it would impact most, the folks who have the hotels can speak to it. So I would introduce my testifiers, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Brian Schmeckel, General Manager of the St. Paul Hotel. I'm here representing the hotels, and just happy to say that I've had the great pleasure of working in downtown St. Paul for the past 10 years, worked at many beautiful properties, the Intercontinental Hotel, the DoubleTree, and now leading the team at the St. Paul Hotel as General Manager. St. Paul has a great momentum right now. You can see hotels that are being built. In fact, just over the past year and a half, we're going to add 350 more hotel rooms to downtown St. Paul. A lot of these hotels in downtown St. Paul are renovating, making themselves look beautiful for the conventioners and all the sporting events that come into St. Paul. So there's some good momentum, including the Downtown Alliance, which is newly formed, in which we're looking at working on, which I'm part of, a special service district. So when our conventioners do come to town, they are given directions, they're being helpful, we pick up paper. So that's something that's on the back burner that's going to percolate pretty soon here very quickly. So it's very important that we receive this lodging tax. Right now, the hotel, we compete. We've had, like I said, had great momentum with the events that we've had these past 4 or 5 years. We want to keep that momentum, and we have to be competitive to those, not only the cities in Minnesota, the Rochesters, Duluths, and so on, but also Milwaukee and Madison, Omaha, Nebraska, Indianapolis, to really bring in these conventions, these new business, because without this new business, the hotels in downtown St. Paul, we're going after the same pieces of business, the 3Ms, the Ecolabs, the Infors, and government business, and there's only so much to go around, so this new lifeblood is very important to our industry.
Thank you. And you have another witness. Please introduce yourself before the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, representatives. My name is Terry Matson. I'm the president and CEO of Visit St. Paul and the River Center Authority. Thank you, Representative Lesh, for authoring this bill. I'm here urging strong support of House File 1218. While Visit St. Paul leads the marketing efforts, this modest request is born out of our industry's strategic plan as a fundamental building block to boost St. Paul tourism. It's driven by the hoteliers themselves, supported by the city, supported by labor, and supported by our St. Paul legislative delegation. This isn't a request for state money. We're just asking for your blessing. Please let us drive more tourism to the capital city. The language mirrors state hospitality law. It's been proven in other communities. It brings to us levels, for example, like Bloomington and Rochester. Even with a 1% increase, St. Paul is still taxing below its competitive set because it doesn't collect additional restaurant and entertainment taxes. It's critical to us that we remain below thresholds. I spent 3 decades building Duluth Tourism as CEO of Visit Duluth before coming to St. Paul 5 years ago, and can say with absolute confidence this is something that's going to make a big, big difference in St. Paul. These revenues will be invested exclusively in promotion. They will be used for travel advertising as well as attracting more meetings and conventions. An example is our Opportunity Fund, where a 2-year, $1.4 million investment yielded $120 million in direct spending from future group business. It's well documented that tourism marketing rewards state government with new revenues as business increases. According to Explore Minnesota, every $1 invested in advertising generates $9 in state and local taxes. There's also a positive halo effect. Promotion not only lifts visitation, it also drives business development, real estate sales, and even things like college and university recruitment. St. Paul tourism opens doors for other economic sectors. But this business isn't getting any easier. Competition for visitors is fierce. Competitors continually invest more because they, too, see the return on investment. Media costs are on the rise, and technological innovations fracture the consumer landscapes. We need to be in more places to attract more visitors. Our hoteliers report 80% of their guests have home addresses heralding from states other than Minnesota. So it's clear this isn't a burden to Minnesotans. This proposed 1% increase equates to about $1 per room per day and will raise approximately $650,000 in today's dollars per calendar year. I'm leaving you with copies of our award-winning Insider's Guide. I think they've been passed around. Please peruse that at your leisure. It's part of a award-winning campaign created from Perception Research with the goal of inspiring and emotionally connecting with travelers through the experience of our local experts. There's a great deal of attention paid to representing a mix of age, gender, race, cultural background, sexual orientation, family status, and interests. We tell the St. Paul story through the authentic collection of voices that make St. Paul a unique and diverse destination. In closing, tourism is critical to St. Paul's future. Economic development is critical to Minnesota. Please support House File 1218. We appreciate all that you do. We need your help, and we need your approval. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or with concerns on this proposal? Seeing none, any questions from members? Closing comments, Representative Lesh.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. No questions. I guess we did a really good job. I think the pivotal issue here is that the hoteliers are supporting this as a tax upon themselves in order to grow our city. That makes it, I think, a really persuasive pitch that they want to make sure that they do the marketing that's necessary to make St. Paul continue to be the premier destination that it is, that you can all be proud to, as legislators, to stay here during that time of the year that you are here, and we would appreciate your support. Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Herr renews her motion that House File 1218 be laid over for possible consideration or possible inclusion in the division report. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
And next we will have Representative Davids, House File 933. And who would like to make a motion to bring House File 933 before the division and be considered for possible inclusion? Representative McDonald moves that House File 933 be considered for possible inclusion in the division report. Welcome to the committee, Representative David.
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative McDonald. House File 933 is a La Crescent lodging tax. I was just reading the headlines of the Rochester Post Bulletin, and it said, it just says, what a mess. They're calling it the blizzard of the century, what we went through this weekend, 50-mile-an-hour winds and 13.5 inches of snow. So that was an interesting drive up here. So I would like to let you know that Mayor Michael Pellinger and City Administrator, the City Administrator from La Crescent, Bill Waller, were going to head out and come up to testify on today's bill. And I said that would be crazy. I-90's closed, 52's closed. So I drove up instead. And I guess that's what F-150s were made for. But it was
Representative Davids, we're glad you made it safely. And you can tell the mayor and the city administrator would be glad to take any written persuasive material they wanted to provide us and share it with the committee.
And thank you very much, Madam Chair. And we did that. We will have the pages passing out a sheet. And I should have put my name on it. I apologize for that. It's the one that says La Crescent Area Events Center and Veterans Park. And what they're looking at is what this bill does is it sets a lodging tax of 2% above the 3% that they could do without special permission from the legislature. You can see in lines 1.9 that the proceeds will be split evenly between the chamber and La Crescent Area Events Center. So a very straightforward bill. And again, my apologies. I had some really great witnesses in the Honorable Mayor and the City Administrator, but I strongly suggested that they not take off in the mess. So with that, I would stand for any questions.
Are there any questions from members on the committee? Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Chair Davids, oftentimes percents are percents, but when you have smaller towns, smaller communities, smaller amount of sales tax revenue, I can understand the request for a higher percentage. Do you have any idea what 5% would generate with regard to the local lodging tax?
Representative Davids.
I do not, but I will provide that to the committee. I'm going to make a note of that. I don't know exactly what it would be, because basically what they're building right now is an event center and a beautiful hotel in La Crescent, but there's a few other smaller ones in the area, but I will get that number for you. Okay. That's an important number.
Yeah. Thank you. Representative Runbeck.
No, I didn't have a question.
Oh, okay. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Davids, I'm just kind of confused. The summary says that currently La Crescent doesn't use the lodging tax because they don't have a hotel. Is that right? And then how would this work? How would the lodging tax work when there's no lodging facilities?
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Drazkowski, they are building, they're finishing up a very nice hotel. It's not in operation yet, but it will be shortly.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Davids, you didn't enlighten us on what the mascot is for the Lancers at La Crescent.
La Crescent Lancers.
I'm going to say David.
Over. Thank you, Madam Chair.
For the freshmen on the committee, when Representative Davids was chair of the tax committee, he would amaze us with every community in Minnesota. I believe he knows their mascot and their high schools.
And now, Madam Chair and members, I'm getting into California. It's also, and it's the, is it Santa Barbara, Santa Cruz fighting slugs?
Santa Cruz.
The banana slugs, and their mascot is a slug. Does anyone on the committee know what the slug is reading? Plato.
Representative Davids.
Plato, Madam Chair. Not Plato, but Plato. Like the real smart guy way back.
Well,
I thought it was the Star and Trib.
Yeah.
Representative Davids, it's unique in that the bill before us suggests that part of the money be divided with a Wisconsin tourism promotion. And is it important to you that that be in the law as opposed to them subcontracting with their neighbor if they feel like that would be a good business relationship?
Maybe a little help from Ms. Dalton, Madam Chair. I believe could you help us out here? Because the bill says one half would go to the city chamber, that'd be La Crescent, and the other half goes to La Crescent Area Events Center to promote local tourism.
Ms. Dalton, sorry.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the information I got from the city is that they wanted to have a total of a 5% tax with 1% going to the event center, 1% going to the Chamber of Commerce, and the rest of it being used for the La Crosse Tourism Bureau and administration of the fee. They can do the La Crosse Tourism Bureau and the administration of the tax out of the general law 3%. So we didn't need to mention them at all in this law. The only thing that's special law is the additional 2% that go to the Chamber of Commerce into the event center.
Thank you for clarifying that, Ms. Dalton. And we have one more testifier, Tony Quillis.
Welcome back to the committee, Mr. Quillis.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Tony Quillis. Again, Hospitality Minnesota, Minnesota Association of Visitors and Convention Bureau. How do you follow banana slugs reading Plato? But, Madam Chair, the first objection when I objected to the City of Plymouth had to do with capital projects on top of that 3% that they are allowed to enact under 469. This one has to do with the second part of that. Cities can enact a 3% lodging tax, but then Subdivision 3 of that law says that they must create a Visitors and Convention Bureau that must be used for marketing and promoting. So the glitch here is where it goes, this one splits it up between the City Chamber of Commerce and the La Crescent Area Convention Center and does not create a Visitors and Convention Bureau. So that would be our concern there, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Quillis. Anyone else who would like to testify in support or with concerns about the bill? If not, Representative Davids, would you like to summarize your bill before we act on it?
Well, thank you very much, Madam Chair, for giving the bill a hearing. And if there are some things that need to be worked out with various organizations, I am very happy to do that.
Thank you very much. And with that, Representative McDonald renews his motion that House File 933 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Thank you, and thank you for coming.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Next, we have House File 388, Representative Nornes. And could I have a motion to bring House File 388 before the committee for its consideration? Representative Petersburg. Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Representative Nornes. Please present your bill.
Thank you, and good afternoon. House File 388 will allow the City of Perham to impose a local sales tax of up to one-half of 1% to raise $5.2 million to address some issues at their community center in Perham. And to give you all the details, I have the City Administrator, Jonathan Smith, right beside me.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Mr. Smith, please introduce yourself for the record and tell us about your community center.
Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. Jonathan Smith, City Manager, City of Perham. As Representative Nornes introduced, we're looking for a local option sales tax to produce $5.2 million over 20 years, whatever comes first. And the money will solely be used for the community center and improvements to the 30-year-old facility. This community center hosts multiple community center type activities, pools, gyms, weight rooms, and the like. And again, being a 30-year-old community center, it has seen better days as far as the operational maintenance activities and efficiencies of the building. The money will solely be used for improvements to the facility, pool filtrations, air mechanicals, the like. There'll be some small additions. Indoor playland would be one. The winter that we've had, obviously those kids like to play inside versus outside, so we'd like to host more of those activities. It would also produce more efficiencies within the building and the flow of the building, as well as produce childcare options within that facility. The $5.2 million over the 20 years will also increase the efficiencies of the building. We'll put a new exterior on it. As you can imagine, energy efficiencies have improved over the last 30 years, and the block that was utilized to build the facility is not the most efficient. So we'll reskin that and re-insulate that facility as well. And I'd like to mention, too, back 30 years ago when the facility was built, it was built with all local funds. It was a great community gathering that brought the capital funds to build the facility, and there has been zero state dollars, just local and local matches and things like that that has operated that facility. So with this, we're just looking to capitalize on the regional use that the Perham Area Community Center utilizes. Perham is a community of 3,400 people. Our community center has over 4,000 members now, so there is a wide reach that we have for the use of that. And again, being in Lakes Country, a lot of tourism and the like within our small community, we have a fairly robust retail community, which all supported through the Chamber of Commerce. So yeah, with that, I'd entertain any questions. Or
great. We do have some questions. First question is from Representative Hertas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Administrator Smith, you just testified that it would be raising the $5.2 million or 20 years, whichever comes first, but that's not the way the bill is drafted. It clearly gives the City of Perm the discretion to continue on for 20 years the later of that. Rather, so if you raise the $5.2 million in 10 years, you could still be collecting the tax. Was that your intention, or was that a drafting error?
That may be, excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative, that may be a drafting error. I guess that's kind of news to me. I thought it was 5.2 or 20 years, whatever came first. So I'll have to double check that.
Mrs. Dalton will take care of any drafting issues that we, to make sure that your intent is implemented.
Perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. And Representative Marquardt had a question.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I wonder if Mr. Smith, I heard him mention that this would, there would be a weight room in that community center. So I'm wondering if this would enhance or lessen the ability of the Perm wrestling team. Because us other Highway 10 teams, Dilworth, Glendon, Felton, Detroit, and Frazee, Perm is number one in the state right now, and there is the wrestling tournament this weekend. So I just, we don't need anything that enhances and makes Perm any tougher than they are right now. So no question.
Mr. Spitz, would you like to respond?
Madam Chair, please. Thank you. Yeah, we're doing all right. one of the key pieces to that, and I'm glad you brought that up, Representative Marquardt. The Perm Dent School District just built a new high school, and a beautiful facility in which prior to that they were utilizing the Perm Community Center. One of the things with the new high school, it gave us the opportunity to kind of relay that facility out and better utilize it for the general population versus just specific uses like the high school wrestling team. So they actually have a state-of-the-art facility right now that's going to make them a little bit better, I think. So,
Madam Chair.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you. Well, Representative Marquardt, you have a mile of beach in Detroit Lakes to distract that team and get them off point.
You'd think it was tournament time in Minnesota. With that, is there anyone else who would like to testify for or against or with concerns on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Nornes, any concluding comments or summary comments?
Madam Chair, just going to have Mr. Smith talk about the vote itself, which took place back in November. A very strong vote in favor of this project.
Thank you, Mr. Smith.
Madam Chair, thank you. Yeah, one thing I forgot to mention is we did have over 70% turnout for the election, which you all are probably familiar with. Minnesota had a great turnout. We did have over 65% vote in favor of the passage of this.
Great. And with that, Representative Petersburg renews his motion that House File 388 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Thank you very much. Thanks for coming down. Next, we have House File 355, Representative DeMuth. Welcome to the committee. And who would like to move House File 355 to bring it before the committee? Representative McDonald moves that House File 355 be considered for possible inclusion in the division report. Please explain your community's proposal.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And with your permission, treats are being handed out. I understand the tradition. As a freshman, first time presenting in a committee, there would be treats.
Representative DeMuth, we're always delighted to have a mid-afternoon snack. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. Thank you for hearing, Madam Chair and committee. Thank you for hearing House File 355. This is for the city of Avon, 0.5% local option sales tax for local street improvement projects. The four priority areas, and I believe you have this in your packet, is Suncrest Edition for $290,500, Avon Estates Entrance for $120,000, Shar Avenue Northeast $134,600, and First Street Southeast $266,000. The city has put this before their voters, and the results of the election were 400 71 yes in favor and 215 against. So that was a great percentage for them. And by improving Avon's local streets will benefit the local businesses, especially those directly adjacent to the streets, and also those that use the local thoroughfares to transport their goods regionally.
Thank you, Representative DeMuth. And I note that there is in the packet a letter in support of this proposal. And so members should pay attention to that. Are there questions? Any questions? Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, does the City of Avon have any tax assessments in their toolbox for street improvements? Just curious.
Madam Chair, Representative, I don't have that information. I'd be happy to get that to you from City Administrator Jody Trout from the City of Avon.
Yeah, Madam Chair.
Representative McDonald.
Just wanted to ask, when I was Mayor of Dillon, that was a topic, and it was a very hot-button topic, of course, street assessment. And we ended up voting in favor of it and having it in the toolbox for the city. And as of yet, in the 10 years, I don't think they've used it, but it was a tool that you could use. But certainly it was a hot topic, and this was another avenue that we looked at years ago. So,
Representative,
Madam Chair, Representative McDonald, I would be happy to check that out with the city. Thank you.
Thank you. And is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for with concerns on House File 355? If not, seeing none, Representative McDonald renews his motion that House File 355 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, thank you, and committee. Thank you.
House File 392, Representative Anderson. And who would like to move House File 392 to get it before the committee? Thank you. Representative Petersburg moves that House File 392 be brought before the committee to be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Welcome to the committee, Representative Anderson. Please explain your city's proposal.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Good to be back before the Property Tax Division. I was with you for a couple of terms and really enjoyed working with the issues that you face. So good to be back again today. And a little bit of a tie-in to Chair David's habit of always using school mascots. We're here today on behalf of the City of Sauk Center. And the nickname of their school teams are the Main Streeters. And that's tied in with their Main Street being the original Main Street made famous by Sinclair Lewis when he wrote his book a number of years ago called Main Street. So this project would directly cross the original Main Street, and that's on the historical registry, so it adds a few dimensions to this project. But we'll get into the nuts and bolts of it, Madam Chair. This is a local option sales tax brought to us by the residents of the City of Sauk Center. It would work on the infrastructure on Highway 71, which is a major artery through that area, heavy dairy area, turkey production as such. It's a heavily traveled road. It goes right through the downtown Main Street area of Sauk Center, and it's due, it's on MnDOT's five-year plan for, I believe, 2024. And the city is getting ahead of things. And the smart thing, I think, is they're looking at replacing all the infrastructure underneath that street when it's ripped up, when MnDOT does its thing. It's going to be an expensive project. And with us today is City Administrator Vicki Whittler to explain how the city proposes to pay for the infrastructure project on that big MnDOT project in the year 2024.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Miller. Please introduce yourself and share some information with us.
Sure. My name is Vicki Whittler. It's actually with a W.
Oh.
That's okay. And I'm the city administrator of the City of Sauk Center. And as Mr. Anderson said, we are trying to get ahead of this project in 2024. MnDOT actually proposed to do this project in 1990, and it was put aside at that time for various reasons, which we don't need to go into today. But we have got some broad brush estimates of the city share of this project of $8 million. And because of that, we don't believe that we'll be able to finance that through local tax levy or through special assessments. There was a question earlier about special assessments. We do utilize that on all of our infrastructure projects. But as you know, it's getting more and more problematic to do so because you can only assess the increased value of the project. One thing about our project may be different from a lot that you've seen today is I'm not building a building. My dream is shiny new sewer pipes and water lines and everything, and then bury it all under the ground. And so that is what our proposal is for. There's a couple other things about it. We do cross two county highways during this project, so we will be partnering with Stearns County. And, of course, you know it's a MnDOT project, so anything MnDOT comes through the middle 24 feet. We have outside the 24 feet. We have the parking lanes. We have sidewalks. So we have streetlights. We have water. We have sewer. We have storm sewer. We have all the ADA accessibilities, all those kinds of things that go along with the project. So we are looking to make this a good project for the city. One of the things, as well as we will be able to provide for some larger housing projects that are being proposed, but our lines just aren't large enough for them. Our water and sewer treatment plants have the capacity. Our lines just don't have the capacity as they travel through or down our main street, which we have maps back into the 1930s. Some of these lines predate those maps, so you can see how old some of that infrastructure is. So that is why we're looking to do it. We anticipate that the sales tax will help us with a portion of our project, but we do intend on utilizing special assessments and our levy, our general tax levy, to make this happen. If anybody has any questions about the specific project, we'd be happy to answer.
Any members have questions on this proposal? Seeing none, is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or with concerns on the Sox Center proposal, House File 392? Seeing none, any summary comments, Representative Anderson?
Thanks, Madam Chair. No, I think Ms. Wheeler explained the project very well. It's a common sense project and one the city needs. We're getting ahead of the game and would appreciate this authority to impose this 1.5% sale tax. So thank you, Madam Chair and members, for hearing us.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Petersburg renews his motion that House File 392 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the division report. And members, I've been impressed with discussion, and we have got our evening agenda scheduled. I should let you know, let all of the greater Minnesota cities and that had to travel farther decide whether they wanted more time to come down and wanted the evening session or they would prefer the afternoon. And so we have tried to accommodate every city with its request for preferred time. So cherish the fact that you may have a little extra time right now. Hopefully we'll have that kind of efficiency when we reconvene this evening. When we reconvene this evening, we are scheduled for 6 o'clock. Leadership of the House has indicated that they didn't anticipate a long session, but we always have to say or half hour after the House adjourns in case something unexpected should arise, so that the public knows that sometimes we have unpredictable schedules that we can't always control when we meet on after a session day. With that, I will just say I appreciate, too, during the meeting, a couple of summary handouts with all of the proposals that were prepared by Ms. Dalton, House Research, were distributed, and that's an and also I'm reminded we are in room 10 tonight. When we have evening meetings, we sometimes are a rotating committee, so room 10 in this level of the state office building. Any other concerns? Otherwise, without ado, the committee is in recess until 6 o'clock or a half hour after session.
You just want to spend more money.
Well, I will call
Property
Tax Division back to order. Thank you so much for coming back for another interesting set of local proposals tonight. And as we said this morning, we have tried to accommodate as best we could the requests of mayors and city council members and city administrators at the times that they wanted to appear. We've given each presenter 8 minutes to present the major components of their efforts. And with that, I think we'll begin. And welcome Representative Hansen, House File 651. And would someone like to move House File 651 for Representative Hansen? Thank you. Representative Carlson moves House File 651 be brought before the committee and recommended to be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Welcome, Representative Hansen. I believe you have an amendment that you would like to have us adopt to bring the bill in the right order. Is that correct?
That is correct, Madam Chair.
And so Representative Carlson moves the A2 amendment. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Pays nay. And the amendment is adopted. And why don't you introduce your bill and tell us a little bit about what your city would like.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. House File 651, as amended, is a local sales tax tax authorized. I know you have several of these bills. This one is in response to the referendum which occurred in the city of West St. Paul last fall. Just for those of you, a little geography, the city of West St. Paul is different than the west side of St. Paul, and it is a separate city west of South St. Paul. But it is east of Mendota Heights and north of Invergrove Heights. So West St. Paul, probably a dominant area you may know, is Robert Street along through West St. Paul. The amendment that was adopted in response to discussions with the chair is to provide some specificity on some of the areas where the road work, the critical infrastructure, would be done with the tax authorizations for a bond to be used for the sales taxes. So Annapolis Street, you may be familiar with the old Cherokee Sirloin Room. Annapolis Street is a border between not only West St. Paul and St. Paul, but it's also the border between Ramsey County and Dakota County. With the exception, if you look at the map, there's a little notch on the top of West St. Paul and Dakota County, and that's referred to as the 40 acres. It's one of the original gerrymanders in our state. That was where the original mayor of West St. Paul lived, and they drew the city into Dakota County and into West St. Paul for the mayor. So it's kind of a historic area, the cultural corridor of Smith Avenue, and then historic Dodd Road. So these are some streets that, because of their border characteristic, the regional nature of them, they get overlooked, but are very important conduits with the city. I have with me City Councilor Wendy Berry and City Manager Ryan Schroeder to give some details. Thank you, Madam Chair, for getting us up first. They have a City Council meeting in West St. Paul in probably about half an hour. So if we could have them come up.
Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Hi, my name is Wendy Berry. I'm a City Council person for West St. Paul.
Thank you, and please share your insights on this proposal.
Thank you, and thanks for having me. West St. Paul doesn't have the property wealth that is often assumed of other metro communities. In a comparison with 28 greater Minnesota cities of similar size, West St. Paul actually has lower tax capacity and lower average household income than the average of these cities. Our tax capacity is 3% lower than the greater Minnesota city average, and household income is 5% lower. Among 39 similarly sized metro communities, our tax capacity is 26% lower than the mean, and household income is 35% lower than the mean. We had this on the bill in November, and we had an 80% turnout of registered voters in our city, and 60% of them voted to authorize this tax. Tonight, we just want to ask for your consideration to support it. Thank you.
Thank you for coming, and we'll make sure you get to the council meeting on time. And I believe you said they had the mayor who'd like to testify as well? The
city manager, Madam Chair.
City manager, I'm sorry.
And he could mention just the details of how this would work in the bill.
Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Ryan Schrader. I'm the city manager for the city of West St. Paul.
All right. Please begin.
Madam Chair, members, Member Berry, or Councilmember Berry, really hit the high point. The important thing to us is we really don't have the fiscal ability to provide for critical infrastructure that many cities, most cities, do have. We kind of found ourselves in a sort of a perfect storm of a number of projects that all kind of came together at the same time. The one that was mentioned was Robert Street, which is a state highway project that we provided a significant amount of funding for. As a result of that, we have infrastructure needs and don't have the ability to pay for them. You know, we could go through sort of detail of you know, how we compare to other cities, as was mentioned. But with that, you know, rather than going through that, I'd just stand for questions if there are any.
Do members have some questions? Representative Hurtas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my question would be,
with respect to the improvements, $28 million to pay for street repairs. I'm presuming you're talking about more than repairs and maintenance, but you're talking about rebuilding some roads. Would that be correct?
Madam Chair, member, yes. We did a pavement management review. It's often called PCI review or pavement condition index. And we found that a number of our streets in town, a significant number of our streets, are below acceptable ranges. So it's like it's a 100-point scale, and a number of our streets are at 45, a PCI of 45 and below, and we're attempting to correct that situation.
And Madam Chair?
Representative Hertas.
Thank you. And with that in mind, it sounds like you probably do have a capital improvement plan in terms of what the strategy is going to be. With that plan, do you have any city policy with regard to assessing part of the cost of this to the benefiting property owners?
Mr. Trader.
Madam Chair, member, yes, we do have an assessment policy. Our assessment policy provides that the benefited property would pay for 25% of a reconstruction cost, 30% of a mill and overlay cost. What our concern is we have projected that we have about $6.9 million a year of pent-up demand over the next 20, 25 years of street reconstruction, and we have a fiscal capacity of about $2 million. So we'll never close that gap. In addition to that, 8 years ago, we had accumulated bonded debt of about $20 million. Currently, we have accumulated bonded debt of $54 million, and that will approach $60 million this year. For a city that has a $14 million general fund budget, that is significant.
Representative Hertas.
Thank you for that information, and very helpful.
Right. Any other questions from members? If not, is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify in support or with concerns about this proposal? No, then some concluding remarks, Representative Hansen, before we wrap up here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I know members of the committee have heard West St. Paul be here on a variety of issues, and you will probably hear a variety more, but I think the key with this one is that the voters, understanding the challenges that the city has, did vote for the sales tax last fall, and I'm asking for your support for the state authorization to recognize that and provide for the ordinance to make it work.
Well, thank you, and thank you all for coming and on a council day. And with that, Representative Carlson renews his motion that House File 651, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. Thank you.
Thank you.
And next we have Representative Schultz, House File 183. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And I would like to make a motion for Representative Schultz. Representative Marquardt makes the motion that House File 183 be brought before the committee for consideration and ultimately to be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report. And I believe we have an amendment, Representative Schultz.
Yes, that's my amendment, A1.
Thank you. And
Madam Chair, so moved the A1 amendment.
Thank you. All in favor of the A1 amendment, get it in the shape the author wishes, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. Welcome, and please introduce your bill, Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to first thank Pat Dalton for catching the mistake and offering and putting together the amendment. So really grateful for Pat Dalton, who caught a mistake
all very grateful for Ms. Dalton on these bills.
The mistake was there for quite a while. So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House File 183 seeks local sales authority for the city of Duluth in the amount of 0.5% to be dedicated to the city street maintenance program. The city put this sales tax question to the voters on November 7th of 2017, and the referendum question was overwhelmingly approved by the citizens of Duluth. In your packets, you have materials indicating the results of the vote, along with the referendum question itself as it appeared on the ballot. And here with me tonight is Sam Ritchie. He's going to describe the need for this dedicated revenue source and the overwhelming vote from the community in support of this effort.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Ritchie. Please introduce yourself for the tape and share your perspectives.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Sam Ritchie. I'm here on behalf of the City of Duluth. Very much appreciate the opportunity to testify in support of House File 183. Duluth is home to over 86,000 residents and serves as a critical regional center for northern Minnesota, over 35,000 daily work commuters, and 6.7 million annual tourists. It's a beautiful city, but it faces some unique challenges, having been built smack dab on the middle of a hillside in a very inhospitable climate. This leads to faster-than-usual deterioration of our infrastructure. And on top of these challenges, Duluth is a large geographic city responsible for approximately 450 miles of roadway and an additional 400 miles of sidewalks. The city's Public Works and Utilities Department has developed a long-term engineering plan that identifies projects across the city that need to be addressed over the coming years. As Representative Schultz mentioned, the revenue from this half-cent sales tax would be dedicated to that street maintenance, street improvement program. The referendum was held on November 7, 2017, and the results were even stronger than we had expected. Voters overwhelmingly approved the referendum at the 76.5% clip. Voters in each and every precinct of the city approved the referendum, and your packet should contain a copy of the resolution authorizing that referendum, a copy of the ballot question itself, as well as a breakdown of the results. And just to give some context of what this would provide, currently the city has about $2.8 million being spent on roads per year, which is good for about 3 miles of roads every year. This sales tax would generate an estimated $7 million additionally, which would get us up to about 16 to 18 miles of roads being addressed every year. We request your favorable consideration for this proposal, and I would be happy to answer any questions committee members may have.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to either one of the testifiers. If I understand what's going on here, Duluth, I think, already has a 1% sales tax that is pretty blanket across it for its uses. I think it can be used almost anything that Duluth chooses, which is unusual in itself. And this particular bill, if I understand that right, references on line 1.19 and 1.20 a Duluth Street Improvement Program of 2017, but there's no amount given, and with the carte blanche of just saying, well, whenever we think it's finished will be suffice, or 25 years. Should we have some a little bit more specificity in regards to what the cost is? Because otherwise you could increase the cost or decrease the cost depending upon how quick you do the projects as well. So I'm just a little concerned about the vagueness of this particular bill.
Who would like to answer that one?
I'll take a quick
thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it does expire after the repairs are made or in 25 years. So that's in Part E, line 2.6 of the bill language. And it does specify that the revenue must be used for street, curb, gutter, sidewalk, and bridge improvements, including lighting and signals in the city of Duluth. So there is more specificity there, and if Sam would like to answer the second half of that question.
Mr. Ritchie.
Yes, the ballot question itself was for this tax to last up to 25 years. If the committee members would feel more comfortable with a slightly shorter period of time, that's a conversation the city would be open to. The backlog and outlay of projects down the pipe are really quite substantial, and so the money will be well needed for the immediate future.
Representative Petersburg.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate that. No, it hasn't anything to do with the timing as much as it is. If you put together this improvement program plan back in 2017, you must have had some sort of guesstimate as to how much it was going to cost, and I think the public deserves to know what they're on hook for, not the 25 years, because that could raise a lot more money that's necessary or a lot less money that's necessary. So I'm just wondering why the amount of the projects, which I think you must know, wasn't given.
Mr. Ritchie?
Yes, the total amount of projects contemplated in the plan is over $500 million over the course of every improvement that would be done. So the there's only $7 million a year that would be generated from this tax. We don't expect we expect that to go out the door very quickly every year.
Representative Petersburg.
Well, okay, so at $7 million, I mean, you're looking at quite a few years. What happens if you don't get finished with that in 25 years? Are you going back to the community? And did you share this $500 million with the community when they voted for this particular improvement?
Mr. Ritchie.
Yes, the street improvement program was adopted in August of 2017 and was cited on the referendum before the November referendum in 2017.
Okay, well, I'll take the word for it. Thank you.
Representative Furtas has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Schultz, thank you for introducing your city. You mentioned $2.8 million is what you've been spending annually on streets. How large is Duluth's general fund budget, and what percent of the budget would street repair constitute at present?
Mr. Ritchie.
The general fund tax currently brings in roughly $14.5 million a year. There had been a previous street improvement program, then the funding source went away in 2009, and since that time there's been a real difficulty in trying to get money for this purpose. After several years of trying different things, the going to the voters was a last resort, and the resounding vote total shows that a needed resort as well.
Representative
Madam Kutuff. Chair, my question was, how big is your general fund budget for the city of Duluth, and how does that $2.8 million you're currently spending relate to your total spending?
I will have to circle back with you on the total number. I know that the 1% general fund sales tax brings in around $14 to $15 million a year, and the $2.8 million for roads, it comes out of that.
Again,
Representative Hurtas.
The general fund budget of the city of Duluth, do you know that number?
I don't have it on the top of my head.
And if you get this $7 million, are you going to add that on top of the 2.8 you're currently spending? Are you going to be spending $10 million a year?
Correct. And in fact, apologies.
No worries.
Madam Chair, correct. And in fact, in conjunction with this effort to go to the voters, the mayor announced a 2.5% reduction in spending, $1 million of which has been also dedicated to streets.
Representative Hurtas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And with regard to what I thought I heard you say, did you say that you have a total plan of $500 million of street improvements? Did I hear that correctly?
Mr. Ritchie.
Correct. The total cost of all the repairs, as estimated in the city street improvement plan, is over $500 million, with roads, bridges, and safety and municipal projects all combined.
So at $10 million times 25 years, that's about half of the money you need.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Ritchie.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions from members? Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or with concerns about this proposal? If not, Representative Schultz, any concluding or summary remarks you'd like to make?
Well, I think the biggest complaint in Duluth are our roads. So that's why you see this overwhelming support from the voters to invest in our roads, bridges, and infrastructure. I just want to thank the chair and the members of the committee for hearing the bill, and I hope you can support it going forward. Thank you.
Great. And with that, Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House File 183 be laid over for possible inclusion as amended in the division report, and the bill is then laid over. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Sundin, the proposal from the City of Cloquet. We have a motion to bring House File 364 before the committee.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move that.
Thank you, Representative. Bernardi moves House File 364 be brought before the committee and be considered for possible inclusion in the division report and laid over at the conclusion of the discussion. Welcome, Representative Sundin. Please introduce the proposal you have for your city.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 364 allows the city clerk to reallocate some of the $5.8 million of local sales tax revenue currently earmarked for property development along Highway 33 and Interstate Highway 35 to other projects that the city may already fund with its sales tax revenue, various park improvements or other sewer and water infrastructure improvements identified in the city comprehensive land use plan. The total amount the city may raise from its local sales tax does not change. I have with me today Mayor Mackey and Administrator Aaron Reeves to chime in on the need for this change and where we're going to go with it.
Great. Welcome to the committee, Mayor Mackey. Please introduce yourself for the record and share your testimony.
Okay. I'm Roger Mackey, Mayor of Cloquet, and I am here to advocate for change to modify the sales tax revenues that we get, the uses, to change away from the development that we hoped would happen on I-35 and Highway 33. However, it's not feasible for various reasons. A lot of wetlands is one, but also the cost of developing it are making it not work. And of course, also with retail mall type operations not being very popular these days, it just isn't going to work. So we'd like to see the $5.8 million that was originally allocated for that purpose be allowed to be used for other purposes that are consistent with the original legislation.
Thank you, and we also welcome Mr. Reeves to the committee. Thank you for coming to down to the Twin Cities.
Yeah. I'm sure I'm just here to answer any questions that might come up that I can help with.
Great. Any questions from members? It's a reallocation of a current authority. Representative Duszkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Reeves. Good to see you again.
Good to see you.
And the question would be the $5.8 million. I know we had this bill last year, too, and there was contention about that and understanding whether or not the voters really understood and expected when they voted that that money would be spent as it's in law right now. And this would be a departure from what the voters are expecting or were expecting then. Is that accurate, and what are your comments about that?
Mr. Reeves?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative Draskowski. Actually, we do have in our kind of our summary sheet that was in the packet the actual wording of the referendum, and we didn't. When it went out for vote with the referendum, it did not identify these areas like this. It was basically a very general question that talked about the use of the sales tax to finance the cost of improvements to city parks, trails, recreation areas, and street and utility infrastructure. So it was approved in a broad sense by the voters, and then when it came to the legislature for the final approval, that's where it was kind of that $16.5 million was split up into those three areas that we're looking at right now. So we think it's definitely consistent with what the voters approved, because the other two areas that we're discussing are basically either parks or infrastructure, and that would be what that $5.8 million would be used for.
Representative Duszkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Reeves.
Thank you. Any other questions for our witnesses? Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or with concerns on this bill? If not, Representative Sundin, do you have any closing remarks before we lay the bill over?
It's a good bill.
We like brevity at evening hearings, so thank you very much. And with that, Representative Bernardi renews her motion that House File 364 be laid over for possible inclusion in the division report.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Eklund, House File 144. And to bring it before the committee, we would like to move House File 144 for Representative Eklund.
So moved.
Thank you. Representative Zhang moves that House File 144 be brought before the committee and be considered for laying over for inclusion in our final division report. Welcome to the committee, and please tell us about this proposal.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House File 144 allows the City of International Falls to impose a local sales tax of up to 1% to raise $30 million plus associated bond costs for transportation and other public infrastructure projects in the city. The tax expires at the earlier of 30 years or when allowed revenues are raised. I'd like to add, Madam Chair, members, that this received overwhelming support last November from the voters of International Falls in the referendum. And with that, I have Mayor Anderson from the City of International Falls to testify to the merits of the bill.
Well, welcome to the committee, Mayor Anderson. I think so far in this division, you've traveled the furthest to come share your city story. So thank you for driving down. I hope it wasn't too bad.
It was a very good trip. Thank you. For the record, Bob Anderson, the mayor of International Falls, and Representative Eklund and members of the committee. International Falls is a small regional trade center up on the border. We provide a lot of infrastructure to the city next door, Rainier, and to thousands of residents in the unorganized area of the county. We also have hundreds of thousands of folks who cross the border each year at the International Bridge, and they certainly use our infrastructure, and that's necessary. Every day we have over 1,600 persons who come into the city to work, and we're certainly looking to have help with our have them help us to pay for some of the infrastructure that they use every day in the as we go forward. We had an engineering firm, knowing that we had infrastructure issues, we had an engineering firm estimate and study our streets, our water and sewer systems, and they have come up with a need of about $17 million over the next 15 years. We've only televised about 25% of our sewer system, so we need to do a great deal more work in that area, and that could cost some additional funds. As well, we're looking to spend money on our water towers, of Highway 53 improvements that the MnDOT wants to make starting in 2020, and we have an international airport that we are going to be rebuilding our runway over the next 4 years. We put about $750,000 each year into capital improvements in the city, and citizens did vote 63% to support that, as well the Chamber of Commerce and others in the community have supported that. It appears that from Northland Securities, a firm here in the Twin Cities, estimated that we would probably generate about $800,000 a year in sales tax funds. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. We ask your support for House File 144, and we'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Mayor Anderson. Any questions for Mayor Anderson? Anyone in the audience would like to testify in support or with concerns about this legislation? If not, and who moved this? Yes, so. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe I wasn't listening, but did you say you'd had a vote already, Mr. Mayor, Mr. Anderson?
Madam Chair, okay. Representative Rundeck, yes. November the 6th last year, we had the vote, and 63% of the citizens voted in support of it.
Okay. And, Madam Chair, the language in the bill is very general. I mean, is the public, you know, interested in nailing down more of the specifics? I mean, when do you know the specifics?
Well, we had an engineering firm do a study of our streets, water, and sewer systems, some of which are over 100 years old, and we have provided all that information to the citizens prior to the vote. We held public meetings and shared with them what the engineers found in their study of our infrastructure.
All right. Very good. Thank you. Thank you much.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Eklund, any summarizing, concluding remarks?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. I appreciate getting the bill heard. I think this is a good bill for the City of International Falls, and I think the residents showed that they are in favor of it. So I appreciate your consideration.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Zhang renews his motion that House File 144 be laid over for consideration in the final division report. Thank you very much, and thank you, Mayor, for coming.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Next, we have House File 867, Representative Zerwas, the proposal from the City of Elk River. Who would like to move Representative Zerwas's bill? Representative Duskowski moves House File 867 be brought before the committee and considered for possible inclusion in the final report. And we have an A2 amendment being distributed right now. Is that an author's amendment?
It is, Madam Chair. We had language in the original draft of the bill that referred to a statutory or the Home Rule Charter city, and Elk River is a statutory city, so this is just correcting that.
Thank you. And Representative Draskowski, are you willing to move the A2 amendment to get the bill in the author's preferred way?
Yes, order? I'm sure I'd move the A2 amendment.
Thank you. All in favor of the A2 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay? The amendment A2 is adopted. Thank you, Representative Zerwas. Please explain the proposal before us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Special thank you to Ms. Dalton and your CA for helping me out with the last minute fix on the bill today. This is a local option sales tax to be one half of 1% sales tax for the city of Elk River. The referendum was passed overwhelmingly, I think near 70% this last November. It identifies $35 million in projects that were laid out, including a multi-purpose recreation facility, a senior facility, and then a host of park improvements. And then something notable that members may remember from last year's bonding bill, the legislature approved money towards dredging of the Lake Horno within the city of Elk River, and money would be designated from the local option sales tax to cover a portion of the city match for that. Madam Chair, I have some testifiers with me, including the first testifier, the city administrator from the City of Elk River, Cal Partner. And then I'm going to hand it to the page. We have some examples of some of the information that the group helping with the amendment, the Act of Elk River, distributed in talking about the ballot language and the projects on the docket for the sales tax.
Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, thank you. My name is Cal Portner. I'm the City Administrator for the City of Elk River. I'm here to talk to you briefly tonight about the referendum, roughly the request for support for our local option sales tax. The City of Elk River lies about 35 miles from Minneapolis and about 35 miles from St. Cloud. And with that, we are a regional center. We serve our surrounding communities and townships for most of our recreation and leisure activities. And over the course of the last 6 years, the City Council has struggled to find ways to replace some aging and rapidly deteriorating facilities, including our ice arena, which utilizes an R22 refrigerant, which is becoming more and more difficult to procure. A senior center that had previously served as our library, and at that time we had ended up building a new library, and the thought was to serve senior programming out of the old building without taking any opportunities to repair that building or add improvements to that infrastructure. And thirdly is a community center building, a smaller community meeting room area that was donated to the city by the local Lions Club. All of these have had increasing costs associated with repair, operations, and maintenance. And the council has really struggled to find ways in which we could financially support the construction of a facility that would meet all of these needs for our community. And so with that, we had done commissioned a study through the University of Minnesota Extension Service to find the capacity for a sales tax. And what that found was over 45% of all taxable sales in the city of Elk River were from folks who were not residents of the community. So that really showed the input of how many people are coming to our city and using our regional park, our nature areas, and our athletic facilities. So with that, we began a community process to find out the support from the community. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Councilmember Wagner to kind of talk a little bit about the community process that we used.
Welcome to the committee, council member.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, Jennifer Wagner, Elk River City Council. As a member of the City Council, you know, we didn't approach this topic lightly. It was imperative that we were listening and touching as many residents as possible to get the information out. So to do so, the City Council held listening sessions throughout the community to engage the residents and ask for feedback on our active Elk River plan. We listened and shaped the referendum projects based upon the tremendous feedback from our community. A bit surprisingly, we had a very active non-resident participation in the listening sessions. We know that 20 to 25% of our senior center and our youth association memberships consist of non-Elk River residents. Seeing their participation and listening to their feedback, along with what Mr. Portner previously stating, that 45% of taxable sales in Elk River are from non-residents, strengthened the council's position on asking the community for a local option sales tax. Something that was also very important to us in the council was, and unanimous among us, was our desire to hold the local option sales tax referendum vote during a general election. We wanted to make sure that we had the most voter turnout, and as you know, in 2018, we were record-breaking. And the active Elk River referendum passed with an overwhelming support of 65% of the voters. So we walked away knowing that 65% of those who went to the polls said yes to active Elk River. This plan encompasses the entire community. So we saw not only the voter, saw that with not only the voter turnout, but with the rally of the community between the youth associations and the senior center and the adults and children all gathering together to get out and get the information out to the community. So everybody went to the polls that day to make an active and informed decision. So we feel very good about our process and our project, and I think we did the right thing by bringing the Active Elk River project to the voters.
Great. Any questions for the witnesses or the author? Representative Juskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I just have a comment, and I would just like to thank the City of Elk River. As you did your referendum, you added all the specific projects in the referendum.
Yes.
A level of transparency that we haven't seen in the referendums for the proposals that have come before us. And, Madam Chair, I would, maybe I should put a bill together. That would be your response, Madam Chair. But we should actually require this level of transparency and maybe add in a statute that when cities come before us that they actually tell the whole story in the full detail to their voters when they actually do the referendum. So I thank you for that, and also let you know, and Representative Zerwasser, appreciate this. I would never vote for a tax that has a turf field house in it, but thank you so much.
Thank you.
The voters get to decide what they'd like. Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or with concerns on this proposal? Seeing none, any concluding remarks, Representative Zerwas?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the committee time and your consideration.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Juskowski renews his motion that House File 867 be laid over for consideration as we put together the final division report as amended. Thank you. And next we have House File 1217, Representative Brand. And let's get that before the committee. Representative Marquardt.
Madam Chair, so moved.
Thank you. House File 1217 is before the committee for our consideration. And please introduce your bill, Representative Brand, and your witnesses.
Yeah, Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for being here. I want to introduce the bill, House File 1217. It's a City of North Mankato food and beverage sales tax up to 1%, and the proceeds would go to the Casbah Park addition. And would be for the operation, maintenance, capital expenses for the regional sporting complex, the costs related to regional tourism events to that complex and authorize capital expenses including securing and paying the debt on the bonds and obligations. And with me, I want to introduce City of North Mankato City Administrator John Herrnstein, who would also like to have a conversation about how this will benefit the community and southern Minnesota in general.
Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself for the taped record.
Thank you, Chairman Loeffler. My name is John Herrnstein. I'm the City Administrator of North Mankato, Minnesota. For over 30 years, Caswell Park has served as a regional and local destination for adult and youth athletics. First constructed to meet a growing and popular adult softball league in the area, it has transformed into continuing to host those types of events, but also serving as a hub for regional fast pitch. Most recently, we announced that the Australian Olympic team will be locating to the park to play in the Midwestern in a league that travels the Midwest and the country. In 2013, Caswell Park expanded its offerings by constructing 10 soccer fields, referred to as Caswell North Complex. And in 2016, the voters approved a sales tax by 74% in anticipation of constructing an indoor recreational facility at the complex in the next couple years. Perhaps some of the committee members who have visited Caswell Park, as it has housed the Girls State Fast Pitch Tournament for the last 28 years. And it's been just a terrific hub of regional and local activity for the community. The City of North Mankato has both constructed and financed the operation of all of these endeavors for over 30 years. And as the facility ages, we find it both in need of operational support and capital improvements. With the 1% food and beverage authorization we are requesting, it would be used, as Representative Brand mentioned, for capital operating and maintenance expenses at the park. Our sister city of Mankato currently has a 1% authorization, but has only implemented a 0.5%. We intend to follow suit with that. Your authorization would not immediately impose the tax, but rather the council would determine when to impose the tax after discussions with local businesses who are aware that we are here and requesting the tax.
Any questions on this proposal? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just want to clear, you're kind of implying that you may not do the full 1% to begin with. You might do graduations within that piece. What would make that determination for you, just curiosity?
The primary purpose, I apologize.
No worries.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. The primary purpose for requesting the 1% is to have parity with our sister city of Mankato. They have only imposed 0.5%, and we're trying to maintain the regional effect of the tax in both of our cities.
Representative Petersburg?
I'm sorry, I guess I got confused with parity. If they're doing 0.5%, you wanted to do a full percent. That doesn't seem parity. That seems like that's larger. So maybe I'm confused. Maybe you could clarify that for me.
Mr. Herrnstein.
Yes. Madam Chairman, the City of Mankato was given an authorization for 1%, but has only imposed 0.5%. If they should choose to increase it in time, we would likely peg it at that rate as well.
Great. Any other questions? Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or with concerns on this proposal? Oh, Representative Druskowski has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the question would be for Ms. Dalton. I do see that on 1.17, they're going to use some of the money for tourism events. Do we have anywhere else in statute? Do any other cities use these tax proceeds for events? That one kind of stands out to me as, you know, when you get into kind of wants and needs, that one's pretty easy to determine that it's that it's a want, not a need. But anyway.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, Representative Druskowski, the food and beverage tax has been probably the tax that has been used for the most different things over time. And so it has been used for promotion over time. It has been used for operating costs over time. And it has been used for capital projects in various cities.
Representative Jaskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. Dalton. And so the language actually says for costs related to regional tourism events. So what do you plan to use the money for?
Mr. Herringstein.
Madam Chairman, Representative Jaskowski, and specifically in regards to related to regional tourism events, we would include events like the State Girls High School Tournament as regional tourism, like the hosting the professional teams, those games, like several of the men's fast pitch tournaments we host. So when you ask specifically on operations, maintenance, and capital expenses, that can be anything from staffing to repairing the fields to expanding the fields to replacing fixtures in the restroom at the concession stand to fixing the concession building to replacing fences or lightings or other things like that.
Thank you.
All right. Any other questions? And once again, is there anyone else who'd like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, Representative Brett, would you like to make any concluding remarks before we act on the bill?
Madam Chair, great bill.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Marquardt renews his motion that House File 1217 be laid over for consideration for inclusion in the final division report. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Representative Morrison, House File 1130. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you.
And to bring the bill before the committee, Representative Bernardi, would you be interested in moving this bill?
Yes. Yes, Madam Chair, I would like to move this bill.
Great. House File 1130 is now before the committee for consideration and for ultimately being laid over to be included in the final report. And with that, Representative Morrison, why don't you introduce your bill and your witnesses?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 1130 asks that the City of Excelsior can impose a sales and use tax of 0.5% in order to raise $7 million in bonding to restore and improve the Excelsior Commons Park. This tax expires after raising the $7 million or 25 years. The Commons Park is a 13-acre park on Lake Minnetonka that is within the City of Excelsior that draws over 100,000 guests annually from all over the region. I have the Mayor of Excelsior, Todd Carlson, with me today to testify.
Great. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Carlson. Please introduce yourself and share your thoughts.
Yeah, thank you so much. My name is Todd Carlson, and I'm proud to be the Mayor of Excelsior, and it's really my pleasure to be here this evening. I was newly elected in November. And this is an issue that's been before our town since 2014. The referendum originally passed overwhelmingly in 2014. It's a referendum that, although the faces have changed, the message is still the same. We need your help. If you're familiar with Excelsior, Excelsior is a city of about 2,300 residents. We're 1 square mile in size. But what makes us unique is we serve as the downtown, really, for the South Lake region, which would include Minnetonka, Shorewood, Deep Haven, Tonka Bay, Greenwood. You could also make the argument that we serve as a downtown, for example, for maybe some of the West Metro to Minneapolis. In 2018, Excelsior received less than $17,000 in total aid. So we're essentially... What makes us, again, unique is we're essentially self-sufficient. And that's why this referendum and resolution is so important to us. I'd like to, if you're, again, with the City of Excelsior, I think a great way to describe is there's a book that's out that's called Excelsior, Amusement Park to the Twin Cities. And, you know, the history from Excelsior goes back to the 1850s. People have been visiting our little community since the turn of the, you know, late 1900s. Late 1800s, early 1900s, to go on the steamboats, to visit the hotels, and they still come to our commons today. And, you know, we're regional with our art on the lake. We're statewide with a lot of the events like the concourse, and we're nationwide now with the Ryder Cup and our ice castle, just recently featured on NBC News as well as CBS. And we just really need the help and support to help fund maintenance and improvement to our 13-acre park, the Commons, and to help provide a little more description of some of the work that we're looking to do. I'd like to introduce Deb Rogers, who's a board member of our Community for the Commons Conservancy that's been put together to advocate for the park for the city. So, Deb.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Rogers.
Thank you. Thanks, and thanks for having me. As Todd mentioned, I'm Deb Rogers. I'm the chair and founder of Community for the Commons, which is a 501c3 nonprofit created to for the betterment of the Commons Park in Excelsior. And as Todd mentioned, our downtown is closely the vibrancy of our downtown is closely tied to the Commons Park. Every year, thousands of people come and visit, and we employ hundreds of people in the area. Many of the people that we employ live in the surrounding communities, and a lot of the college students in the surrounding communities pay for their college's education through summer jobs at Maynard's Wharf, at all the different restaurants and grocery store in Excelsior. And our thriving commercial district also helps to support the Minnetonka School District, et cetera. So many people visit and then they stay to dine and to shop. So improved park facilities would allow us to host additional activities that we can't currently provide. In our plan, Community for the Commons helped put together a master plan with input from all the residents of the community, and we've got broad support for the plan. It includes a revamped port, which is where a lot of our commercial boats, you can get on a cruise to see Lake Minnetonka from our park. Also, our band shell, right now we only use a couple times a year. It's a concrete block facility only with no sound. So we'd like to replace that with a multi-use structure that could accommodate weddings, also family gatherings, et cetera, as well as concerts. So that would increase the vitality of our area. And one of our goals of our plan is to increase winter use, to bring in more events and activity during our slow season to our downtown. So there's a new skating rink and warming house in the plan, and that would help to increase our vibrancy. We're looking at a new covered reservable picnic area, a new fishing pier, an updated baseball field, and there we could host premier tournaments, and possibly a seasonal restaurant. So our goals are ambitious and long-term, and they're estimated somewhere between $15 million. But it'll add to the current vitality of our community. So our nonprofit's working to raise money. We've already developed an Adopt a Tree and a Seat plan to care for our landscape and also care for our park furniture. We're partnering with our local Rotary Club to start raising money for that band shell. They're going to be hosting a new concert series, and they're also going to be doing some additional fundraising. We've also assisted our city manager in procuring some grant money from the DNR for shoreline restoration, because we need to improve the lake quality as well. So our nonprofit's really well positioned in the area to provide some philanthropic support. We have members, many of our members are not from Excelsior. They're from Deep Haven, they're from Greenwood, Chanhassen, and Tonka Bay. We even have one from Atlanta, so Georgia. So, but we can't do this alone. And in order to leverage to do the best thing we can leverage their sales tax dollars into more philanthropic support for our park. So thank you very much for hearing my...
Thank you, Ms. Rogers. And we have a question from Representative Hertaus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is for Mayor Carlson, if he would like to come back. Mayor Carlson, congratulations on becoming the new mayor in Excelsior. And
thank
I'm
you so
well
much.
Acquainted with Excelsior. I spent a lot of my youth on Main Street in Excelsior when there was an Excelsior amusement park.
Yep.
Also on the soda fountain at Bacon Drug.
Yep.
And my mother worked full-time on Main Street. One of the problems that this bill has run into is it's been asking for more money than the voters authorized in terms of the authorization. Not that you can't go ahead and do that, but certainly it's more transparent if the voters really did approve the total amount of spending. That issue aside, my question really speaks to
what your phasing of this project. Is it kind of your plan to do a pay-as-you-go, or are you going to bond to do all the project right away and then use the revenue to service the debt?
Yeah, thank you so much for that question.
Mr. Carlson.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes,
no worries. Sure.
My apologies.
Please go ahead.
My apologies. Yeah, thank you so much for your question. Yeah, no, the as Deb Rogers has mentioned, we've got a comprehensive plan that's been put together. Certainly, the intent is to try to accomplish as many projects as we can, but it would be a program where we would go pay as you go, essentially identify those key projects that need to be addressed first, whether it's a boardwalk, whether it's a band shell, whether it's updating our bathroom facilities to make sure they're ADA compliant. We've identified a number of projects within the master plan that we know need to get done, with the hope of one day accomplishing all the projects in the plan.
Senator Hurtado.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And my only comment or recommendation, having past been a mayor, is that 25 years from now, although your revenue and sales probably will go up as a percentage of that, you certainly cannot predict the future cost of these things, so you may want to consider some bonding as part of your plan. Thank you.
Thank you. And is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify for or with concerns on this proposal? Well, thank you. Pardon? Oh, there's another question. Representative Peterson.
Thank you. You know, as I was recollecting discussions from last year as well, when we were hearing this, it does seem to me, and I think Representative Hurtado, and thank you, Madam Chair, for that, that it seemed to me that the original voter was for $5 million. Was that what I remembered? And this is requesting $7 million. And I'm wondering how you come up with the distance and how you justify that, if that was indeed the vote that was approved by or an authorization by the public.
Mayor Carlson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the question. My understanding was the original, and I'll ask staff, was it originally $5 or $7 million? Okay. I'm not sure. Back in 2014, I was not involved with the City Council, so I'm not sure as to what the amount, if there was an amount specified. But the referendum that the resolution that we recently passed was for a $7 million project.
Representative Peterson.
And funding.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I understand that's what the resolution is. I'm just saying in regards to dealing with taxpayer dollars and the approval process, it's not very comforting to have the amount changes over time. And so I just would say, you know, try to be consistent with what the voters approved and their intention is, because otherwise it develops lack of trust. And so I'll leave it at that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And with that, any concluding remarks, Representative Morrison?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members, for hearing the bill. I think this would be a wonderful thing for the community of Excelsior, which has it has 64% of its housing units are renter-occupied. It has a 10% poverty rate in the town. So the tax base is small, and the commons is a huge part of the vibrancy of life there. Thanks for hearing the bill.
Thank you, and thank you for the minor trip down memory line. Like Representative Hurtado, I remember as a child going to the Excelsior Amusement Park, and it was always the week after the state fair because my parents didn't think they could afford the state fair. But they could afford to go out to Excelsior and give us a few rides as kids.
Thank you for your time tonight.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Bernardi renews her motion that House File 1130 be laid over for consideration and inclusion in the final division report. And welcome to the committee, Representative Murphy. House File 1318 for Lake County and Two Harbors. And let's get a motion before the table to hear the bill. Who would like to move House File 1318?
So moved.
Thank you, Representative Zhang. And we have an amendment in the packet, an A2 amendment to get the bill in the order in which the author prefers. So Representative Zhang moves A2 amendment. Any questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A2 amendment is adopted. Welcome to the committee, Representative Murphy, and please tell us about this proposal.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This is a new one for me.
Lake County and Two Harbors have a lodging tax, and this modifies the lodging taxes for both Lake County and the city of Two Harbors. And the amendment puts it in fine order, and thank you for doing that. With me tonight is Janelle Jones, who is the president and CEO of the Lake County Chamber of Commerce, and Nate Ide, who is the land commissioner and is representing the county board here tonight.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Jones. Please introduce yourself for the record and share your thoughts.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair and committee, and Representative Murphy for having us here tonight. My name is Janelle Jones. I am President CEO of the Lake County Chamber of Commerce and the Tourism Director for the Two Harbors Area Visitors Bureau. Tonight I am here to talk about Lake County a little bit. It's Lake County. I am thinking most everybody has found their way to Lake County, and if they haven't, they've heard about some of the fantastic things we have up there. Split Rock Lighthouse, Gooseberry Falls, Castle Danger Brewery, Betty's Pies, or the start of Grandma's Marathon. We have a lot going on up the shore. Lake County is unique, and the county is very large, but we have a population of about 11,000 residents. For a county of our size, last year we had about $48 million in gross receipts in the tourism industry, and over 1,000 people are employed in the tourism industry in Lake County. With taconite and timber, our big economic drivers, tourism is right up there in the top three. We do fantastic 4 to 5 months out of the year, and then like everybody else in northern Minnesota, we kind of hang on for dear life and get through those shoulder seasons. What we're here asking for tonight is to just kind of bridge the gap. Our neighbors on each end of us have lodging tax. Cook County has done a fantastic job. Linda Jurek up there has been kind of a leader in this model and has been very supportive of us also. The collaboration along the North Shore is, you know, we all work together really hard and get people to come up north, and it strengthens the economy on the entire shore. St. Louis County also has proven themselves well with their lodging tax. So we're really just trying to be strategic in our marketing efforts to try to get through these shoulder seasons, trying to help strengthen the economic climate on the North Shore and bridge that gap between our two counties and help Lake County, you know, rise above and get on an equal playing field with everybody else.
Thank you. And Representative Murphy, you said you had another witness? Or is that just a resource?
I think he's going to answer questions if I can't.
Okay, great. And are there questions for, yes, Representative Hertas has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And could you clarify for me, so this is a 4% tax on top of the present 3% for a total of 7%. Do the communities immediately to the north of you, Silver Bay and Beaver Bay, do they have a local lodging tax as well? Would you be in parity with nearby towns, or would you be encouraging people to bypass Two Harbors when you stay over?
No. Actually, I think there might be a little bit of confusion, because we are looking for an overall 4% tax in Lake County. City of Silver Bay has a 3% currently. City of Two Harbors has a 3% currently. The discussions have already been had that those cities would dissolve those, and Lake County would then take on a 4% tax. There's currently no Lake County lodging tax. So we are looking for a total of a 4%. The City of Two Harbors would have a 5%, because you'll see there's language in there regarding the tugboat Edna G. That was put into legislation back in 1991 to support the tugboat Edna G. So it would be a 4% countywide with that extra 1% to a total of 5% in the city limits of Two Harbors.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for that clarification.
Yes, thank you.
I was
That's
concerned
important.
That 13.85% sounds a little bit like you're in Minneapolis or St. Paul.
No, we're just going for the 4.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And are there other questions for our witnesses? Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this question was kind of raised at our earlier session today about the difference between the first 3% and the requirements that that 3% is used for versus additional ones, and when whether or not you could pick or choose, if you're at a 6%, which 3% you impose and which 3% you don't. So if I understand the statute, and Ms. Dalton maybe can help me here, if I understand the statute, the first 3%, you have to use 95% for marketing and 5% for other things, management, et cetera. And then by law, you can have an additional amount beyond that. And that additional amounts above that is where it is less requirements attached to it. And so now here's another example in which the city doesn't want the first 3%, which kind of requires the mandates of the requirements, and are going towards a 4% instead. And I'm just kind of confused how that works and what kind of requirements take precedent one over the other. And so maybe we can have clarification on that.
Ms. Dalton, why don't you explain how this might work in general and then in this specific proposal?
Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, I do not know why I keep doing this. Madam Chair, members of the committee, basically the way the general law lodging tax under 469.190 works is that a city can impose a tax up to 3%, a township could impose a tax up to 3%, and a county could impose a tax up to 3% in the unincorporated portions of the county. I believe what Lake County is trying to do is say, instead of everybody imposing their individual taxes and administering all their individual taxes and having individual tourism bureaus, we're going to have one tax countywide. We're going to have one tourism bureau countywide. And it's going to impose a tax of 4%. 3% of it will be used for the revenue from 3% of the 4%, which is 75% of it, would be used exactly for what they have to use it for under general law. It would be used for general tourism promotion within the city, within the county as a whole. Their additional 1% that they're asking for would then be used to fund, promote specific events in a number of cities that are specified in the bill. My understanding is Two Harbors actually has, what's unusual about Two Harbors is Two Harbors did get a special law many years ago that said they could use a 1% tax to fund the Edna G, but their combined tax, when you added that to their general law, could not exceed 3%. They're saying we're going to take off our 2% general law tax, and we're just going to have our 1% for Edna G, and then we're just going to the countywide tax of 4%.
Representative Petersburg.
If I could then follow up. So I think I followed all of that. Now, earlier today, we heard from a city that was implying that they may or may not impose the original authorized 3%, but they wanted to go just to the second 3%. So how would that have worked, and how does that work?
Madam Chair, Representative Petersburg, I think actually the way to maybe deal with this issue is to add another amendment to this bill, because right now it says Two Harbors can't go over 5%, but there is nothing in this bill that says any of the other cities within Lake County couldn't later on go, well, you know, yes, we're still doing the county tax, but we want to impose an extra 3% that we would fund just our own tourism. So you could, if you wanted to, you could add some additional language that said basically no other city or town located within the county could impose the tax under 469.190 as long as the county tax was in force, if that is the concern.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Dalton. As always, you are very informed about that, and I certainly would make the recommendation to consider for the chair as she moves forward with this bill as well. Thank you.
Thank you. And any other people in the audience who would like to testify for or against? Mr. Quillis.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Tony Quillis again, representing Hospitality Minnesota and Minnesota Association of Visitors and Convention Bureaus, and just wanted to thank Representative Murphy for her inclusion of the Visitors and Convention Bureau for the 3% of the lodging tax. And as Representative Petersburg has brought up today, we've had this conversation many times of you can, and Ms. Dalton has clarified, that the 3%, the original 3%, the cities can do as long as you create a Visitors and Convention Bureau and spend 95% of the proceeds promoting and marketing the city. And Representative Murphy's bill does that today, and I thank her for that and the clarification in the amendment today. And then I think, Madam Chair and members, you've heard today, too, maybe a little bit more clarification on Representative Petersburg's question on would then for example, Beaver Bay, Silver Bay, Two Harbors, Knife River, Isabella, Finland, then be able to enact their own on top of that. And I don't think that's the intent of Representative Murphy or the Lake County Visitors Bureau to do that.
Any questions for this witness? Not. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And seeing no further testifiers, Representative Murphy, any concluding comments before
just
we wrap
that
up?
No other city has the Edna G. And the Edna G has a great following, and we have to get Edna G raised out of the water very, very soon. And so Edna and all her supporters, thanks you.
Very true.
Thank
and
you.
I thank you.
Thank you. And with that, Representative Jeong renews his motion that House File 1318, as amended, be recommended to be laid over for consideration in the final division report. Thank you very much. And with that, Representative Fang isn't there. She is. Great. I'm going to ask her to take over the chair while I present House File 574.
All right. The bill we have before us is House File 574. Chair Loeffler, would you like to move the bill before the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd like to bring forward House File 574 for your consideration for the division report, and I have an A1 amendment I'd like to move.
All right. We have the bill before us, and we have an author's amendment. Chair Loeffler moves the author's amendment labeled A1. Does everyone have the amendment? Any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. To the bill, Chair Loeffler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is about the Minneapolis lodging tax, which it has had since 1969. So it's been a long time of using these resources to develop regional facilities that serve the entire metro area in many instances. And it's faced a unique situation in that it has always had a maximum sales tax rate imposed in law that no other city has ever had since way back then. And it has been adjusted over time related to the legacy amendment sales tax, the twin sales tax, so that we always kept the same level of revenues, even though we increased because of state action other sales taxes it wasn't adjusted for the legacy amount because that was authorized not by the legislature but by the people, as you recall, from a constitutional amendment. So our lodging tax, the standard 3% that is statewide authorized for businesses with more than 50 rooms, got reduced down to 2.625%. And then we had a situation in which Hennepin County decided to take advantage of the statewide authority for counties to impose a half-cent sales tax for transit and transportation. And when they did that, Minneapolis was surprised to be notified that it had to again reduce its lodging tax down to 2.125%. And unfortunately, this happened before the Super Bowl, and we weren't able to get it addressed last term because of the failure to agree on a final tax bill. And so now we're in a situation with the Final Four coming into Minneapolis and bringing us some anticipated winter involvement, not only just in our hotels, but in hotels throughout the metro area. That's what our facilities tend to do, is fill hotels throughout the area. We are now in a situation where we will continue losing money off of a base that has existed for a long time until we can eliminate this unique cap that it only applies to this particular city that was implied way back when this was authorized decades ago. And with that, I have I have Jeff Johnson, who's the director of the Minneapolis Convention Center, to share some more information.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening. My name is Jeff Johnson. I'm the executive director of the Minneapolis Convention Center. And we appreciate your time in committee tonight and want to thank Representative Loeffler for chief authoring HF 574, which would remove the cap on Minneapolis's lodging tax. The city's lodging tax revenues are used to pay for three key facilities of regional and statewide significance in Minnesota: the Minneapolis Convention Center, the Target Center, and U.S. Bank Stadium. These facilities are important drivers of economic activity for the city, the region, and the state as a whole. The people and groups who attend these events at these facilities often also visit local restaurants, retail, stay in hotels in and near the city, visit other nearby attractions like the Mall of America or nearby museums. According to 2017 data from the Minnesota Department of Revenue, state sales and use tax revenue reported in the city of Minneapolis totaled nearly $680 million, which is up almost $100 million from $585 million reported in 2015. Add to that the state and use tax revenue reported in St. Paul and Bloomington, and the total increases to more than $1 billion to the state. Annually, the Minneapolis Convention Center and the Target Center are host to about 500 combined events. These events draw millions of people from throughout the state and across the country. Visitors come to attend trade conventions, corporate meetings, sports events, musical acts, high school tournaments, and dance competitions. We also host many interest-specific events like the Auto Show. Right now, the Home and Garden Show is at the Convention Center, and national conventions. Earlier this month, 1,000 professionals from the Society for Range Management met and discussed soil conservation and worked with farmers from around the state to discuss new ways to manage livestock and cropland. Last year, we hosted the Society of Mining Engineers, which showcased Minnesota's mining industry and brought 4,500 mining stakeholders from around the world to the convention center. Our city lodging tax is an important resource to us as we manage these publicly owned assets and plan for needed improvements to preserve their safety and viability. The current cap on the lodging tax has a real and tangible impact, especially during this robust and successful hotel market currently experienced in Minneapolis. According to the hotel revenue figures from STR Industry Report, total Minneapolis hotel revenue in 2018 was approximately $371 million. That's up 13% from $328 million in 2017. And based on that figure and the current lodging rate of 2.125%, 2018 collections are estimated at $7.9 million. Using the lodging tax rate prior to October of 2017, which was 2.625%, collections would increase to approximately $9.8 million. The original lodging tax rate authorized in 1986 of 3% would garner an estimated $11.2 million, which is nearly $3.3 million more than collections at the existing rate. Additionally, the actual 2018 collections are estimated to be approximately $400,000 lower than the 2017 collections. That's $8.3 million versus $7.9 million in 2018. And that's a lower number when hotel revenues were up 13%. And so there is quite a loss there for the city of Minneapolis. Removing this tax cap as authorized in law would improve our ability to plan for the future and support our over 36,000 hospitality jobs in our community. We have a lot of needs in these buildings. They're large buildings that serve a lot of people, and so these additional taxes and resources would help us to be able to fund those future needs. We greatly appreciate your consideration of this bill to remove the cap on the lodging taxes in the city of Minneapolis and hope that we can count on your support for this legislation. I'm happy to stand for questions.
Thank you, and you'll see this handout in your packet. You'll see that and even after us going to the full 3% that is authorized across the state, we will be below Rochester, Bloomington. We heard earlier today a proposal for St. Paul that would go above that 3%. We're just trying to return to the 3% level that has historically been our provision, and I think my city is disappointed that when we finally had these premier events, we weren't ready to capitalize on them because of the unique situation that we faced. And I'd answer any questions.
Right. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, I thank you for coming forth with this. I want to just clarify, you still have Minneapolis still has a 13% tax rate that it's collecting on various things. And so I think what I'm hearing you say is that whereas the lodging tax portion of that may be less, other taxes that the city has created has grown, and so the net in all of this extra dollars going to the city has stayed the same. But the anticipation is if we could increase the lodging tax, we could actually have more dollars coming into the city than what we had. Because if I understand right, the 5% extra tax for the light rail and other programs that were imposed is what's bringing this down. And so the city has made a determination that that was the direction of collecting taxes and for a specific purpose rather than lodging tax. So I just want to be clear that the implication that the city is getting less tax dollars is not the actual case. It's just that it's getting it distributed in different ways. So am I correct in all that or am I wrong?
Madam Chair? The sales tax that forced the cap to lower Minneapolis's lodging tax was a decision by the Hennepin County Board to take advantage of a statewide authority for all counties to be able to offer to impose a half-cent sales tax to support transportation and transit improvements. And it was that took it over the cap that was in statute, so it was not an action by the city. It was, in fact, both Hennepin County and the city at the time were not fully aware of this cap that has existed for decades. But the Department of Revenue keeps good track of things and sent the notice that said you now have to reduce your 3% to 2.125%. percent as a result of that action. So it was actually an action of the Hennepin County Board. Minneapolis is one of 47 cities within Hennepin County.
I would like to refer to Pat Dalton to see if she has any additional
She's
comments.
Right.
Madam Chair and Representative Petersburg, in addition, the other beneficiary was actually the state. When the legacy tax was imposed, that actually caused the Minneapolis lodging tax to have to go down by that 0.375% as well.
Sure.
Representative,
thank you, Madam Chair. And yes, you're right. Now that I remember, the county actually imposed that, and so Minneapolis is caught in the middle there. But I appreciate that, and looks like you're on your way to getting more. So thank you.
Representative Hertas?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Madam Chair, just two quick questions. One, I don't see it as far as the specific language in the bill, but is it your intention just to supplant what was lost and have that as a new limit, or am I reading this correctly that you're not having any cap at all and that you could raise the limits to a higher rate?
Madam Chair and Representative Hertas, we would go under the standard 3% limit for the lodging tax. What we would do is eliminate this cap on all sales taxes that is unique just to Minneapolis of all the 853 cities in Minnesota, so that we don't have to worry about getting caught in this by another action by another local government or state action, that we'd be treated like other cities. And if we were to go above the 3%, we would have to return here like others.
And Madam Chair, and the other question was, in the controversial decision to have the dissolution of CTIB in Hennepin County, which City of Minneapolis is resident to, it appears to me in my participation in that controversial issue, it appeared to me that the City of Minneapolis was, with the exception of the Kenilworth Corridor, which was a private citizen's lawsuit, it appeared to me that the City of Minneapolis was all on board about having this Southwest Light Rail expansion and did know what the consequences would be if that dissolution happened.
Chair Lawler?
Madam Chair and Representative Hertas, I was not involved in those debates between the county and all of its cities. I can say, though, that I have been told that the city really did not understand, nor did the county, that taking that action would result in a forced reduction in our lodging tax, and that was a situation that they quickly, as soon as they were notified by the Department of Revenue, wanted to address so they could go back to the 3% authorized under law.
And then Representative Rumbach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I could, so the tax, is it, I mean, I see that you're saying it does get used for these major event centers and so on. I mean, is that an express dedication that's statutory somewhere or in your ordinances?
Chair Lawler.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Rumbach. Yes, it is, and Ms. Dalton could go through that if she wanted to. But I can tell you that when the national scale facilities that have been established in Hennepin County using our local sales tax and others are used, they fill hotels in Bloomington and Roseville and Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center. When we bring in these national scale conventions or when we bring in national events like the World Series, and so it does impact others far beyond Minneapolis. Sometimes those have been suggested, not by my city directly, but by others who want to see statewide facilities established in Minnesota.
Well, let's see. Madam Chair, that was a yes, so it is expressly dedicated, if I could.
Mm-hmm. Pat Dalton?
Find out. Madam Chair, Representative Runbeck, yes. The original tax, which was enacted in 1967, went to the general fund, but since 1986, the use of the revenues have been dedicated. They've been modified as we've added stadiums and things like that, but mm-hmm. It has been dedicated revenue.
Okay, great. Thank you. Representative Marquardt.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And while we're kind of talking about these various facilities, Target Center, U.S. Bank Stadium, so forth, Mr. Johnson, when you talk about the revenue is being used for that, what is it for? Improvements there, or is it for promotions, or like at U.S. Bank Stadium, what type of uses would it be specifically? Just interested in,
Mr. Johnson,
if you had that handy, be interesting to know.
Chair and Representative, for the Viking Stadium, U.S. Bank Stadium, it is used to help the city's obligation to pay for U.S. Bank Stadium, and so the city does pay for both an operating fund and a capital fund, but then also as part of the $150 million that the city put forth, that goes towards then will help pay for, starting in 2021, that will help start paying for their share.
And Madam Chair.
Representative Marquardt.
And Mr. Johnson, do you know about how much annually would go towards that U.S. Bank Stadium payment by any chance?
Mr. Johnson?
Chair, Representative, it's about $25 million. I may be off by a hair, but it is about $25 million a year.
So, Madam Chair?
Representative Marquardt?
So, you know, when I look at this and you look at Rochester and Bloomington and Duluth and St. Paul, I mean, I do think the cap is certainly looks to be unfair here. There's no doubt about that. I hear from other members there might be some concerns about not putting any cap at all, whatever that might be, and I don't know what that number would be, but I do think Minneapolis being the only one being capped here, especially when through a state agreement on some of these stadiums and so forth has put, you know, an obligation as part of that on the city of Minneapolis and so forth. But, you know, maybe in the future, maybe as we pursue this forward, maybe there should be some sort of a cap. I don't know. It seems to be that that would be maybe the only concern that I'm hearing on this. I don't know.
Does anyone from the audience wish to testify on HF 574? All right. Chair Flaffler, any closing comments?
No, I appreciate the committee's consideration, and just to be clear again, our lodging tax would be at the same at the 3%. It's about the addition of all these other taxes, and I know that the stadium tax goes through the year 2046. Which is a significant commitment. That means we won't be doing local projects like we've heard from others during that time. So appreciate your consideration. And with that, I would renew my motion that House File 574, as amended, be laid over for consideration in the final division report.
Representative Chair Loeffler renews her motion that HF 574 be laid over for as amended, as possible inclusion in the division report, and that bill is laid over. And with that, we are adjourned.
Thank you.